Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today we have part three with Sue Zakowitz, and I could not be any more happy to close this wonderful three-part series out with you today. All right, guys, before we finish up this interview, I just got to say a couple things, you know, about the interview and kind of refresh your brain if you've been listening for the last 2 weeks to the episode. I mean, everything we've covered so far with Sue has been so inspiring and so uplifting and so honest. And I think that's, you know, this is the message of Teach Me Teacher, and everything that I strive to do for you guys is to bring you information, to bring you content, to bring you whatever it is I'm bringing you that day, whether it be a video, a podcast, a post on Facebook, a post on Twitter. I'm always trying to bring that honesty, because I think in the world that we currently live in, honesty is just something that isn't around that often. I mean, I might be wrong in my assumption, but I feel like people, and you know I feel like this. I just feel like there is just not a lot of honesty for us to latch onto. And that's what I'm always trying to bring to you guys. And that's why I just love Sue Zakowitz's message, because everything about what she did was honest. She didn't go out and buy an expensive program, right? She didn't go off and spend thousands of dollars on new technology. She got a team together. They had a focus, which was literacy. They split it up into parts and they actualized their mission. I think that is so powerful for educators today and people in general. Facts are sobering. Looking at your problem and breaking it down into pieces and then figuring out how to take it down, how to bite it off into chunks so we could actually solve our problems rather than just complaining about them. And I think that's the beauty of Sue, is that they could have just sat back as a failing high school and complained about the test and complained that their demographics, or they could complain about their level of teachers, you know, insert whatever excuse you want, but they didn't, right? They fixed their problems. They looked at the problem, broke it down into something they could understand, and fixed it. And I think that really, like, after the last two episodes and then going into this closing one, that's the message that I hope it hits home for you guys, because, you know, whether you're a teacher, an academic coach, an administrator, a college student listening to this because you want to be a teacher, you know, whatever your walk of life is, this is the stuff that changes lives, right? This simple message of just figure out what your problem is, break it down into something, and get it done. Get what you need done so you can move on. Don't sit there and pay lip service to a solution. We have too many people that do that for us. There's too many people that do that in the world, and we just pass the buck down the line and hope someone else is going to fix it. Or we just complain about it forever until we drive ourselves or someone else crazy and nothing ever gets done. I think really to enact change in our personal lives and in education and, you know, wherever you're at in life, you have to be able to look at the facts, look at what's honestly there, right? Not what you hope is there, not what you wish was there, but look at what's actually going on in your life. Look at the facts, break it down into consumable parts, and actualize your mission in terms of trying to fix whatever you're trying to fix. And I think that is just, that speaks volumes, and it's absolutely amazing that I got to host these episodes. I'm very proud of the last three. You guys have been resonating with them. Several of y'all have reached out to me. It has been fantastic to hear you guys connect to Sue's message and the message of this interview. So without any further ado, I will let Sue close this one out for us, ladies and gentlemen. Please enjoy part three with Sue Zakowitz. Yeah, and you know what? I want to take a note just to talk about how powerful conversations can be, because, right. One, that's the whole reason I do the podcast, is because I love being able to, you know, on the selfish reason, I get to talk to great people all around the United States and, like, in the world, because we get to have these educational conversations, and I just happen to record it for other people to hear. But there's power in being able to discuss things.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is Mary Howard, who's, you know, I consider her one of my mentors. We're becoming great friends. I love her so much. She was on the podcast. She's a kind of a consultant person. She wrote a book called Good to Great, but she does these Good to Great Twitter chats. She's one of the people who created these Twitter chats. And every Thursday night, they bring up a series of questions with a host. And a bunch of educators are on there just talking to each other. And it's so invigorating to see so many intelligent people talking about great things. So I imagine that's kind of what your think tanks were like.
Exactly. And, you know, and people have a way of, like, you think all of a sudden someone will say something and you're like, I never looked at it that way, you know, and we learned how to have a great fight too, so that, we could figure things out and we, you know, we just figured out how to make decisions. And I just felt, I'd come home from the restructuring meetings and I'd be like, oh my God, that was awesome. You know, and I missed that sort of group think. You know, it really was powerful. And people would say, like, well, what if we look at it this way? Or what about this? And you're like, oh, geez, I didn't think of that. You know, I mean, it was just powerful stuff. It really was.
So how did you pick the people to be on that committee?
Well, like I said, at first we just begged people because nobody wanted to be on it.
Right, right.
So we begged people with, like, promising them food and stuff like that. But very seriously, after we wanted to make sure we had lots of different viewpoints, departments, subject areas, grades. So we actually had a very brief interview with people. Not a lot. We asked them we had an application for the committee, and we would say, you know, and not anything, you know, not like one of these ridiculous long-winded applications. We just said, why do you want to be part of the restructuring committee? And what do you think you can contribute most to the committee? And what's the one issue you'd really like to get on the table? And just those few questions really gave away. And then we'd have a follow-up interview and just say, you know, what makes you want to be part of this? And we would use a hypothetical, like, what if someone sitting across from you says, you know, I'm not so sure that idea is the best way to go, because how do you, you know, and it was a great way of engaging people. And sometimes, here's what happened with us, Jacob. Our restructuring committee became so popular with the faculty. My last year as principal, we had over 80 applicants for the committee. So it's heartbreaking, because it's exciting that so many people want to be part of it, but you can't have a committee of 80 people.
Yeah.
So we always changed up, like, we try to keep the balance of some veterans, because keeping a constant voice was important, but also bringing new voices on board. So sometimes we'd actually ask people to step off. Like, we'd say, Jacob, you've been such a great contributor for the last couple of years, but we really need to get somebody else from the ELA department, you know, and people understood that. But we'd ask them to, the people that we would use to facilitate discussion groups, we still tried to incorporate teachers' voices as much as we could, because that was huge for us, making sure everybody felt like they were included. The worst thing is when a committee works in secrecy. I mean, it's like, what do you think they're talking about? We were very open. After every meeting, we sent out a restructuring newsletter so people knew what the agenda was. Here's what we talked about. We shared it with everybody always, so that there were no, hopefully they didn't feel like there were any secrets. And I don't think people felt like there were. So.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's so important. I was going to ask you how you guys relayed information out, because there can't quickly become us versus them mentality.
Yes. Yes. And you just, and that's destructive. It's destructive to the school. And so what we would do is, we always sent out a voice restructuring newsletter. But beyond that, if we had a big discussion on something, like I'll use an example. We were talking in one year about changing the academic levels of the school. So restructuring tackled that first. But you know what? That can't be just the discussion at the restructuring committee level. The whole faculty needs to weigh in on that. So we would send out at our next faculty meeting, we'd say it this way: restructuring just had a powerful debate on the issue of the academic levels of the school. We need your help. We need everybody to weigh in on this. So on Thursday, blah, 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 we're going to have this we're going to have a full faculty discussion on this. The restructuring committee would facilitate the discussion, but not participate because we had already talked about it. Restructuring would facilitate it and take all the notes and get all the information and then bring it back to the restructuring committee, and we would debrief, and then we would send out another debriefing newsletter. So it was a constant give and take so that nobody felt like, we hope nobody felt like it was us against them. Because I think that's an important warning that you just said. That's a good way to put it. It can't be that way. And the best thing we could do is help the faculty have the same type of discussion that we had at restructuring. That was powerful for us.
Was there ever a time when your committee got gridlocked on an issue?
Oh, yeah. A lot of times we did. The worst one was early on at the, we were going down the road of literacy, but at the same time, there was this movement in the country of having theme-based schools. So in other words, pathways, like career, and we were such a big school. We had four buildings, red, blue, green, and yellow, and they were just, that was just a management way. But there was actually a huge debate over whether we should have each house have a theme, like a career academy, you know, so that the red building would be health and human services. The green building would be engineering. The, you know, the yellow building would be music and arts or something. And, you know, and we really, it was about 50-50 on the committee of how people felt. And it was real gridlock. And we finally had to have a final meeting where we said, we've got to make a decision whether we go forward with this. And everybody weighed in. And we decided finally as a committee not to, that we were afraid it would take us too far away from the mission of literacy. And it's not that career stuff isn't good. I don't mean that. It just was too much. You know what it would have been for us? It would have been way too much to, you know, you heard me say a million times, focus, 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 focus. And we felt that would take us away from the literacy focus.
Oh, man. I love this idea of focus because one of the things that happened, one of my first years here, is a lot of teachers felt like we had so many initiatives going at once.
Yeah.
That we had no focus. No one knew exactly what the expectation was with all of them. And it became so convoluted. And one of the, a teacher of mine or a principal, she said the thing that she tries to do at her school is anything she gives to the teachers, anything that they decide that they're going to do as a school, they take something off of their shoulders.
That's
so it's
right.
Not just another thing. How do you, you know, as a leader of a school, or even if you're just on a committee, how do you make sure you're not giving too much to your staff that they feel overwhelmed? Like, how do you get that temperature check?
I know.
Like, what's that process? What was that process for you like?
Yeah. It's easy to end up going way off. It's so true. And you used a key word, overwhelmed, because I think we've all been in that situation where because it's not that these other things aren't important. You know, like we had so many problems. It was easy to say, oh my God, we've got to deal with suspensions. Oh my God, we got to deal with this. Oh, we have to deal with this. And so what we did is we stayed with the literacy, 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 and we did it by constant communication and constant implementation. And I talked about this in the presentation by saying, like, we kept giving this to everybody. The four steps we were taking, simple, not easy. We started with a team, we focused on literacy, we implemented with a plan, and we monitored it like crazy. And so we always stayed true to that. And we only maintained two goals as a committee, which is improving student achievement and personalizing education. So if it didn't fall into those categories, and you know, usually we checked each other on restructuring. Somebody would say, we're getting way off track here. You know, like it is easy to have that. By the way, I don't know if you've read them, but two of my favorite works about focus were written by Mike Schmoker. The first one was just called Focus. And it's all about focusing on literacy. And then he followed it up with a book called Leading with Focus. And I think Mike, I don't know if you've read Mike Schmoker's work, but he's the kind of writer who he just sort of, no nonsense. He kind of pokes you like, what are you doing? I mean, he doesn't say it that way. He's far more eloquent than that. But it's when you read his work, it's not like reading this, you know, something that's so esoteric. It's just, it's powerful about what good leadership is. So I love his stuff on focus. And we had already gone down the road of literacy. And then one, I forget, I don't know if it was me reading it first or someone else, but we then used that, by the way, as a book study on our own restructuring committee. And that helped us keep the focus too, because then we would sort of, every time somebody would go off track, we'd hold up the book, focus, focus. So, and you have to, because it is easy to get pulled off. And for good reason. There's lots of issues schools are facing. You just can't fix them all. Focus on one thing and do it well first.
And they tell us to do that in our classrooms too. One of the things I was told so many times as a newer teacher was pick one thing and get good at it and then move on and then slowly add. But Schools, it's like we forget that philosophy that we were told and we just want to tackle every issue.
Yes, we do. Well, and again, it's understandable because there's so many pressures on principals and teachers and administrators of all, there's so many pressures on us. And, you know, and I think about it, you're young and I was in the business so long. When I think of what schools used to be asked to do and what they're asked to do now, we're asked as teachers to do far more than when, you know, I saw it in my own career of what the things that I had to change to do more of. So it's understandable how that happens, but you have to stay the course. You just have to, because otherwise nothing gets accomplished. You know, it's like too many initiatives. It's just initiative overload and nothing is achieved. So we just kept saying focus, focus, literacy, 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 literacy. And I know it sounded boring, but we didn't veer from it. Still don't.
So let's, you know, I got one last question for you, and that's, you know, for principals who are listening, for the leaders in any content area, or for anyone who wants to enact change at wherever they're at, whatever campus they're at, whatever position they're in, what's your advice for looking at what you have, picking your initiative, and then attacking it full force? What would you tell someone who knows they need change and they want to do it, but there's just this massive hill in front of them?
Right. And there often is that massive hill. The advice I give principals all the time is do something. Do something. Seriously. One principal put it so, he made me laugh in a meeting. He said, because I kept saying, you got to step off the cliff and do something. Like, you know, even though when we started with our awful Shakespearean initiative, it didn't work, but we tried to do something. All right, we failed and we went back to the drawing board. But I find far too often we obsess over strategic plans. I mean, I swear, if I ever had to write another strategic plan, we plan, but we don't do something. And so I was talking about this, and one principal said to me, you know, I thought about my wall of three-ring binders and how many strategic plans are up there, and I didn't do any of them. He said, when we get back to the school, we're just going to start with something. And so how do you pick? Well, I'd say this. My advice is always start with writing, because writing is thinking. But it does. You don't have to. Like, I just worked with a school that was starting with reading. That's okay, too. I mean, it's literacy. Focus on literacy skills, because those are skills that transfer. But don't try to do everything. Pick one thing that you want to do. For us, initially, it was response writing. You know, kids have to read something and write and respond to it in writing. You're not going to, and make it something. The other huge piece of advice I would give is make it something that you can do across the school. because otherwise schools far too often are the way, well, I would use, I don't know that it's the case in your schools, but for Brockton High, I'll just use us as an example. We had over 250 teachers at the school. You might as well have had 250 different schools because everybody had their own goals, their own standards, their own. So by having something across the school, you used a word earlier, Jacob, which I think is right. It's unifying. So pick something that benefits the kids, like writing or reading, and that unifies the school around that common theme. And then do something. Because if you don't, you just keep talking and nothing ever gets done.
Facts are sobering. Look at the yeah. facts.
Yeah.
Do, and it's like we said, do something. Get to the core because nothing right. beats work. And, you know, these initiatives are like, if anyone's ever known a creative person, creative people love talking about their work. A lot of the times they don't spend a lot of time working on their work. You know, if you've ever known a wannabe author or musician or something like that, they love talking about what they're doing, but they don't actually do the thing that they're talking about. In education, we do that a lot. We spend time yeah. talking about all these great things we're going to do, and we have committees, and we use all this yeah. meeting time. And
right.
And then, like you said, it's on a shelf, and we never yeah. do any of them.
Right, right. And that, and you know, and it just takes some steps. And it won't always be perfect either. And just because something fails, don't stop. Take a step back. You know, I used to say to on the committee, one of the things, you know, as administrators, you know, like you probably know this and say this about your own principals or, you know, administrators. Sometimes we repeat things all the time and then they throw it back in your face. And so one of the things I used to say all the time was, remember, sometimes we have to take a step back to go further forward. And because we, you know, there might be a misstep. We did one literacy workshop one time on assessment that we thought initially when we were creating it was great. And then when we did it, the teachers were like, I don't even get this. So we have to take a step back. It doesn't always go the way you hoped it would go, but taking the step is what matters. We're trying to do something. And by the way, acknowledge it if it doesn't go well. We said after that, we said, we're sorry. We thought that would go differently. We need to go back to the drawing board. But then we came back right at it. We sure did. We didn't say, all right, now throw that out. It didn't work. Let's revise it and come back to the drawing board. So strongest advice is do something across the school because it becomes powerful in, you know, school wide. It just isn't usually done. It's, you know, I guess I probably said this in the presentation with you in Texas. A lot of times, far too much of education is by chance. Are you lucky enough to get the teacher that teaches you writing? And if you're not so lucky, is that fair? You know, so you get the teacher, Mr. Worksheet, you know, and, you know, if you didn't get the writing teacher, it should be all of us teaching certain skills. So, you know, so just do something that's going to unify the school around a literacy theme. It works. It really works.
Sue, you are such a fantastic leader in so many aspects. Your story is so inspirational.
And you did a great job with the podcast. It was just an easy conversation, Jacob. An easy conversation.
Thank you. It's just this idea of conversation, and I really do hope that, you know, your story. You know, we let it go a little long because it just needs room for people to fully take in. And ideas like this need to be explored with a lot of probing questions because the people who are listening to this are going to be the people who want to do their change.
And they'll do it. Yep, I agree.
Anyway, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast because I know you have all kinds of wonderful things you're doing. You're out in Florida right now enjoying all that good stuff. So anyway.
Weather report.
Yeah. Anyway, I do want to thank you. You are fantastic. I hope everyone gets what I got from, you know, hearing you and then getting to talk to you directly. But before I let you go, for anyone who wants to book your speaking or find information about you or come into contact with you, what are some of the ways that they could do that?
Okay, good question. Thank you. The best way is to is to work with the International Center for Leadership and Education. It's Bill Daggett's group, ICLE. They're the ones that run the Model Schools Conference every year. Here's the website is easy to remember. It's leadered.com, L-E-A-D-E-R-E-D, leadered.com. And that's how I work through them, and they can reach me and be in touch. And plus, if you're interested more in the Brockton story, a few years ago, I wrote the book called Transforming Brockton High School. And by the way, and you can get that at the website, leadered.com. And the proceeds of the book do not go to me. They go back to Brockton High School. We started what's called the Champions Endowment Fund, and the money goes back to the school. So that's pretty, we always need extra funds in the school. So anybody that does get the book, leadered.com is the best way to get me or the book.
That's awesome. I didn't know that about the book. That's super cool.
Yeah. Transforming Brockton High. It sort of tells the story about what we did. It's not a researchy book. It's just, it's conversational. It's like, here's what we did. So empower a team, focus on literacy, implement with a plan, and monitor like crazy. That's the sort of nutshell of the story.
And that's what we're going to close on, Sue. Perfect. You have been amazing. Thank you. Thank you again.
It was a pleasure, Jacob. It was a pleasure.
For everything else, ladies and gentlemen, go to teachmeteacherpodcast.com where you can find all of these wonderful episodes just like this one. If you don't want to go to the website, you can go to iTunes and hit subscribe, and you can be there to download all of our episodes, and they'll come right to your device of choice. If you want to hit us a review over there on iTunes, it will be much appreciated. I love hearing what you guys think of the podcast, and those reviews help other people find the show and get us more teachers to help just like you. If you're not the reviewing type, come see us on Facebook, hang out in the community, share this on Twitter. Love to hear your thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. For everything else, have a good one.